Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number three of the most thrilling 3 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's a listener-supported broadcast, so of course, if you go to the website, the homepage, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood doesn't go ahead, make my news, you can have a opportunity to donate a little something to just pay all the general bills and stuff that are involved with paying internet and exposing scumbaggery and just generally surviving. You know, that's all I ask is to survive so that I can expose scumbaggery. You know, I think that's a pretty reasonable request considering the amount of entertainment value that people get out of this, especially with my incredibly lame puns. And my very special guest is Barry Taff from barrytaff.net, like taffy but without the E.
Right.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Okay. Now, and our previous two segments, we've gone over a lot of ground here, and one thing that struck me out is an awful lot of mentions of incredibly fine women that you've come across in your life. And
yes,
I've had
I've met some incredibly stunning women, but because of the work I do, I tend to attract the wackos.
Yeah. And it's one of those real annoying things, actually, is because you need somebody who's on the right wavelength. Really?
Or is on any wavelength versus floating in the void somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's amazing. When I was younger and the girl I almost married in 1977, my parents met her and they said, you know, what do you see in Barry? And, well, you know, and she goes, and they go like, what? And I mean, I don't know. It's everyone, you know, I'm not the best looking guy. I'm not tall. You know, I wear glasses, whatever. And in fact, I remember back in 1990, I met a girl. I was going to see a play, and I got there early. So I was wandering around looking at shops in West Hollywood on Northern La Cienega. And I'm in the shop looking at some, and there was a beautiful girl behind the counter. She looked exactly like a young, Bo Derek. I mean, literally identical. I don't even like blondes. They're not my type. But anyway, we're talking. We started to become friends, and we exchanged numbers. We got together, started dating, and whatever. Beyond beautiful. I mean, just his hair, face, eyes, figure, my height. Very, very interesting, but a little off the wall, so to speak. So she told me a story. She said, look, if we get involved, you got to know something. I have visitors to come see me, and they might do things to you. And I went, what? What are you talking about? Well, you know, they might be curious as to who you are because they don't know you, and weird things happen. Just, you know, I don't know what they are, entities, or I thought, oh, my God, this woman's out of her mind. And I didn't really pay too much attention to it. So we're involved in on and off, nothing continuous, nothing like it's going to change the world. And so one of the night, I wake up in the middle of one of the nights, we're together, and I look, and I found myself not totally awake. I was, instead of just laying in bed next to her, I was restrained on a table, and I was in a very weird position, like my head was down, my head was hurting, too much blood was flowing to it, and I couldn't open my eyes fully, but I was in like a, not a drugged state, but semi-conscious, like a hypnagogic state or hypompagogic, whatever it's called, hypnopompic state, and it's like I wasn't in her bedroom anymore. I saw a totally different environment, and I thought, what? And then I see her next to me on a similar table to mine at a different angle, camped at a different angle. I go, what's going on here? And then I lost consciousness, and I fell back to sleep. I woke up hours later in the morning, and I thought, that was really weird. And she says, well, what'd you think of my friends? I go, what friends? The ones that, you know, did that to you at night. I go, what are you talking about? Well, you saw them, right? I said, well, I don't know what I saw. You tell me. So she described what happened. She said, those are my friends. Well, I don't know what they are. They're like beings. I go, like ghosts? No, I don't think they're from here. Okay, that was almost 24 years ago. Out of the blue, she calls me, emails me a couple years ago. Out of the blue, I haven't talked to her in a long, long time. Because we stopped seeing each other by 91. It was like over, just, you know, wasn't going anywhere. So I reminded her of the situation. She said, what? Remember you lived in Santa Monica on, I think it was 9th Street or something like that. Remember this weird stuff? She had no memory at all. Remember we dated? Yeah. Remember you met friends? We had friends in common? Yeah, right. Remember? She says, no, I don't remember. You told me that some friends of yours might visit me and it might scare me. She goes, no. I said, okay, well, one of us knows, the other doesn't. But you know, there was a girl, another girl I dated in the 70s, and she popped up in 1999 in a lecture I was giving. And she looked great. No lines, no wrinkles, no fat. When I knew her, she was a little odd, but she was somewhat normal, a little paranoid. So she shows up at my lecture, and I introduced her to my colleague at the time. And, you know, she goes, oh, listen, I need your help. What? She with what? I said. And she said, well, I'm being harassed by demonic aliens that are conspiring with the CIA and the FBI. I went, oh, God. And I said, look, I've got to go. I've got to go. So I left, and my friend and I driving back together. And he said, I thought you didn't date girls like that. And look, when I knew her, she wasn't like that. She was very normal. So she calls me, you know, on and off, and I said, look, your name was Linda. I really don't want to discuss this because I'm not interested in what you're talking about. She kept calling and calling them. I said, look, if you're going to keep talking about this, I'm just going to hang up. I don't want to hear about it. It sounds like you need psychiatric help. So I said to her, you sound suicidal. If I were you, I'd see a psychiatrist. You get some intervention real quickly. And, of course, a few weeks later, something provoked her to try to kill herself by walking in the middle of the street in front of a car. She was injured, but very little, thank God. And they've held her for 72 hours. They released her. Happened again a few weeks later. And she thought, well, the aliens and the government must be doing this to her. I went, oh, God. So I'm just taking some water. She said, left me alone for a while. And then a couple years went by, I didn't hear from her. Good. 2008, February, she calls me. And I didn't, no caller ID, she's out of area. It's her. Oh, hi, She goes, I need your help. I go, what is it now? She goes, no, the Earth's about to explode. I went, what? What are you talking about? Oh, I go, with the pesky aliens again? Oh. So I couldn't pass up this opportunity. I had to do something funny. And I remember her name is Linda. I said, excuse me, Laura, I've got to send baby Kal-El off to his new homeworld before Krypton explodes. And I hung up the phone. She probably thought, Krypton? Kal-El? What are you talking about? That's Superman's real name. And Krypton. And she didn't bother me after that, left me alone, which is fine. But I keep running into things not identical to this, but, just people that are out to lunch. I met a girl through a dating site a couple years ago, stunning, about 12 years younger than me, physically gorgeous. So we're having dinner, very casual. And she said, look, I'm not really interested in getting into a relationship with anyone. I go, then why are you on the site and why do we meet? Well, I read a little bit about you, and I thought you could help me. With what? Well, I'm going to be gone soon. And I thought, are you moving? Yeah, she goes, in a way, I'm moving. I'm killing myself soon. I thought you could help me transition to death a lot easier. I said, what? What are you talking about? Well, she goes, I hate my life. I hate being alive. This and this. I said, are you seeing a psychiatrist? You need some kind of intervention or psychotherapy or antidepressant medication or anti-anxiety meds? And I said, she had a teenage daughter. She goes, as soon as my daughter's 18, I'm killing myself. I go, what does your daughter think about it? Oh, she won't mind. I said, what are you, selfish? What's wrong with you? Are you insane? Yeah, she was. So I said, look, I paid for the dinner, and I left almost immediately. And I said, look, she was driving a $375,000 Mercedes AMG. And I forgot the model. It was one of the good ones. And I said, look, what's her name? I don't remember. Doesn't matter. I said, if you're going to be dead soon, you don't need this car. Why don't you give it to me? She goes, what? I go, dead people can't drive. Her husband used to, franchised a Mercedes dealer. I said, if you're dead, you don't need a car. Why don't you give me the car? Give it to me for a dollar. I'll buy it for a dollar. No, I go, but you're going to be dead, right? I said, look, I've got to go. And that was it. Another girl I met months later, closer by, striking, looked like a young Joan Collins, absolutely drop-dead gorgeous. So we're talking, and she's starting to sound weird, kind of crazy, paranoid. And so she was hobbling, kind of limp, like, what happened? She said, well, I climbed up a tree with my high heels on, and I jumped out of it and hurt my leg. I go, why did you climb up the tree with your high heels on? Well, it was there. I thought I would do it. I go, okay. And then she goes, look, I know all about you. I know you're a medical intuitive. I know you can do these things. She goes, don't do anything with me because I'm telepathic and they'll know you're doing it. I go, look, I've got to leave because I don't get it, Barry. You're not bad looking. You're obviously educated. You're intelligent. You're well-spoken. You're successful, I guess. You didn't know. And why is it that you're not married? And look, I said, because I keep meeting women like you. And she went, what? And that was it. Nice knowing you. It's like, it just doesn't end. I'm telling you, if I had a dollar for every crazy person I've met, I don't date men, so, you know, but I meet a lot of crazy men as well, but the women, it's just, and you know what's interesting? When I was growing up, I'm probably a lot older than you are, I'm sure, and, you know, teenager in my 20s and 30s, not one girl I knew drank or did drugs. Just didn't happen. And now, these women I'm meeting online, so many of them use drugs and drink, I can't believe it. Some other girl I met on this other site, stunning, just 52 years old.
You'd be surprised. I mean, it's almost impossible for a young man to go out and try to, you know, get some without the girl drinking or being on drugs.
Well, I mean, it's one thing for people to drink, you know, drinking, you know, socially drinking. But to the point, I was on a date 4 years ago. I think I mentioned this yesterday, and the girl was stunning. She was just absolutely stunning, and she lied about her name and where she lived. And she had four large glasses of wine. That's more than a bottle. And she drank before I got there. And I said, and you wonder why you can't get anything done. You're an alcoholic. It's but never growing up that I run into it once, not with one girlfriend, never. It seems now people, they bury their own problems in alcohol or drugs. And this girl I mentioned a moment ago before the last one, who I only met online, stunning, 53 or 54, looked like she was 30, face hair. And she seemed, so we talked, and a little weird. And I said, you know, you sound a little strange. You do drugs? Oh, yeah, she smokes weed all day, every day. Does cocaine every so often. And go, oh, look, I've got to go where? To the earth. End of story. And the best one was, this 1986, this was great, stunning girl, her aunt set me up with her. So I went out and had dinner, straight and very attractive, but just I didn't like her. So she said, oh, my bed is haunted. I go, yeah, your bed is haunted, okay. I go back to her place, it was very close to the restaurant. I sit down on the bed, oh, I jumped up, I go, she goes, see? I go, okay. I pull the mattress up, they're these giant amethyst crystals with the points going up. I said, yeah, I got the point, do you? What kind of crap is this? You're insane. Well, if I figure out crystals under the bed, I won't age and I'll live forever. I go, look, you're going to age like everyone else on the earth does. You're going to get old. You're going to die like everyone on the earth does. The crystals aren't going to help you. It may help your mind, but it's not going to help your body. And I think your mind's already gone anyway, so it doesn't matter. And when I never talk to her again, her aunt says, why don't you like my niece? I go, she's insane. And that was it. I said, you know, her life's ribs and crystals, and she thinks she talks to dead people and aliens all the time. I go, okay, time to go. I've got to leave. So it's like I said, the women either think I'm nuts, which is like very understandable from most perspectives, or they make me look normal. I met a girl back in the late 80s at a conference. Stunning. She was a lawyer. Girlfriend, another friend, lawyer. That should have told me something. Because I hate lawyers in general, and because they prey on people. And she, my friend told her I was a writer, but he didn't tell her what I write about. And, yeah, we had a very short date, like 30 minutes. The minute I started talking, what I did, she I've got to go. She got up and left. Okay. Yeah, I don't care. Fine. It's, like I said yesterday, the older I get, the less I have in common with more people. It's just, it's... Most people have a life, you know, they have a job, they come home, they have R&R. They have a family, they go out, they do things, they go to movies, they go to plays, go to the beach, go to a park, they go hiking, whatever. I remember I met a girl, this was early 90s, stunning, too tall for her. It was very nice, we talked, got together, not dating. And I just said to her, you know, I always ask women one question, as I ask friends in general. When you're not working, what do you like to do? So she's a woman. She was a model. Stunning brunette. Just dropped in stunning. She said, well, I'm not working. I like to go out, get drunk, throw up, and pass out. I said, wait, my ears are plugged here. Well, do that again? repeats it. I go, why? Well, I've hated my life. I hated my family growing up. And when I'm unconscious, I don't worry about anything. I said, well, I've got something. I don't have to worry about what? I said, you. That was it. Never talked to her again. So, you know, it's like unbelievable. And then on my website, there's a blog called The Demon's Lair. It's a metaphorical term. It's literal. And an old colleague and friend of mine, who I worked with for a very long time, in 2006, we were on a case in Calabasas, which is in the West San Fernando Valley. The case was interesting. We didn't have any experiences, but that's normal. And there was a woman living there with her boyfriend, her fiancé, and the woman's mother. Very nice people. Talk. There was another woman there who friend invited her, but her friend didn't show up because she was sick at the time. So the woman who didn't belong to the family, I'm looking at her, and I just thought, this woman's going to be trouble. There's something wrong. And she's looking at my colleague like a vulture would look at prey. Well, it's orbiting overhead before it pounces. And she's smacking her lips, and I thought, oh, this woman. And then she starts talking about she works with the angels, and they're telling her they help get rid of the demons. And I go, oh, okay. So we leave. My colleague and I leave, and of course she jumped all over him, and she moved herself into his house, or he moved her into him within a matter of months. And I warned him. I said, look, I don't like this woman. There's something about her that seems to be wrong. I think she's a con artist. She's a scam artist. She's going to rob you blind. So she started cutting him off from all his friends. She stopped. People would call him. She wouldn't let them talk to him. She started money coming in. She would steal it. He never looked at his accounts. Gave her access to all of his bank accounts and every credit cards. Years go by, more, and she kept telling everyone that she was working with me. And I said, I warned her, I do not work with you. I have never worked with you, nor will I ever. I don't work with psychotic people, and I think you're psychotic. You're a psychopath. You're a criminal psychopath. And I said, I don't believe a word coming out of your mouth, but I know what you're doing to my friend. So in 2008, I posted a few comments on a few websites, and all I said was, "This I've never worked with her, I'm not working with her now, and I never worked with her. I'll never work with her." That's all I said. She heard about it within a day, went nuts, tried to get my friend to give her money to sue me with for posting a disclaimer. That's all I did. That's all I said. And, no, he didn't give her the money. Nothing happened. Not that it would have anyway if she sued me, because I just posted the truth. Nothing that was could be looked at as libelous or slanderous. The next day, after all this stuff happened, I go down. Someone tried to steal my car, and they couldn't, so they vandalized the hell out of it. And I think it was her. No, I don't think she did it. I think she had one of her friends or cronies do it. And so the police came by, and I said, I think I know who was behind this. They said, we don't care. It happens 1,000 times a day. We don't give a damn. Don't bother us. What if it's stolen? Well, report it stolen. Call your insurance company, you know? I said to them, well, let me ask you a question. Let's say I come down and I find someone trying to steal my car. What can I do? They said, go back, call the police. Nothing. Can I attack them? No. Can I shoot them? No. Can I stab them? No. Can I taser them? No. If they come into your house, you can do whatever you need to stop them. But outside, there's not a damn thing you can do, even if they're confronting you by your car. You can defend yourself, but you can't initiate action against them for trying to steal a car. I said, okay, hypothetically, what if I was married or my fiance or something or a girlfriend to attack her? You could defend her, but you cannot attack them unless they attack you. Oh. Well, since then, I've got a unique device. I mentioned last night that I have on my dining room table a 3-foot-long model of the Enterprise with hundreds of LEDs. But that's a toy, a large, expensive toy. I also have a real Star Trek phaser. I'm not talking about it just being a real prop. It propagates a very powerful 2.5-watt beam of light that will cut through people like a hot knife through butter, through metal, through plastic, and burn wood really bad and set things on fire. There are only 3 made. I got one of them. One is made to look like the original series, which is what I wanted, but he wouldn't sell that. The third is from the Next Generation, which I said, that looks like a dustbuster. I don't want that. The one I got was from Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, from that movie. and it is illegal to fire because it's way too powerful. If you don't, if you're not in a lab sanctioned by the government, you can't have a laser with more than 150 milliwatts. This is way over that. I farted outside once up at the clouds a couple of months after I got it at night. It lit up the entire cloud base bright green and then blue purple. And they were helicopters over quickly. So I'm not going to do that anymore. But if someone broke in, instead of shooting them with a gun, which I don't have, I could fire this at them and it would blow a hole right through them. It's literally Star Trek.
Nice one, Captain Kirk.
Yeah. Well, I knew, I used to date William Shatner's niece. I knew Nimoy's son, Adam, a long time ago. I knew Roddenberry from way back when. It's, yeah, the oldest linkage. Yeah, what's interesting, Shatner's niece, her last name was Khan, K-A-H-N. It's a Canadian name. And it's, I mean, it's so, and ironic with the Wrath of Khan and all that. It's just, it's kind of weird. But
here I was thinking it was a Mongolian name this whole time.
Well, it is. It is. But, I mean, it is Khan. Yeah. Well, Khan, K-H-A-N, is Mongolian. Correct. It's Eastern European, Russian, Tibet, that area. Correct. But hers was K-A-H-N. And I was doing a show with Shatner several years ago called William Shatner's Word or What. I thought he was going to be there. I haven't seen him in a long time. Say hello, talk to him. You know, I really like his work. And, you know, he wasn't there. They're going to shoot us separately, which is too bad. I would like to talk to him. And also tell him, I don't even remember his, because I met him again originally when the series was on in the 60s, late 60s. And then I met him again in the mid 76. I was at a party in Malibu, and he was there, and we gave a little demonstration of remote viewing, and it always works well when it needs to be. And he was there with his new wife, Marcy Lafferty, and he seemed nice, a little strange, but nice, and he remembered me a little bit. But, you know, he met me, like, how many, 10 years earlier? Why would he remember me? I mean, you know, come on. But the thing with the phaser, I took it out to meet some friends at a restaurant a couple years ago. I never took it in the restroom because it looks like a weapon, and, you know, I'd get arrested. And so outside, I fired it down on the street, on the sidewalk. It burned the pavement. And it's so bright at night that you become flash blind for about 20 seconds. You can't see a thing because it's so bright. So, I mean, you know, it's a great way to keep people away from you. If they break in, you fire it at them, and they'll never see again. You fire it close to their eyes, they'll be dead. About a year and a half ago, when I got it in 12. And I've got it on eBay, strangely enough. Had to send a waiver proving how old I am and the whole bit, and, you know. Okay, so the manager of my building comes in, and he sees the Enterprise on my table. He goes, oh, that's nice. And he sees the phaser on a stand. And to keep the power pack in the laser, I forgot to take the power pack out, the batteries. And he picks it up, aiming it at his face, thinking it's a toy. And I turned and I go, no, and I jumped and grabbed that out of his hand, knocked it down. I said, if you would pull that trigger, you'd be dead. It would have blown your head off. He goes, what? So I fired it in the apartment, and he just, my God, I said, yeah, you'd be dead. It would have killed, it would have burned a hole right through your head, right through your eyes to the, out the back of your head. You would instantly dead, cauterized everything. Oh, my God. Well, good thing I saw what he was doing, or I'd be in jail right now, or prison. I can see it now. Today, Dr. Barry Taff, well-known parapsychologist, was arrested today for murder with possessing an illegal firearm. So not going to take that outside again. So it's little toys, you know, it's whatever. But I mean, if I caught the person who was vandalizing and trying to steal my car, I couldn't even fire it at him. I just go upstairs, call the police, and they show up a week later. You know, they don't care. It's not their car. Yeah. You there?
Yes, Barry, I am here. I have somebody that's just arrived that I need to attend to. Would you be able to entertain the listeners for a moment? Perhaps tell them something that's very, very strange and funky. Because this whole Star Trek thing is actually quite amazing, Barry.
What, the whole what you said?
The whole Star Trek thing, you know, like, you got a phaser and everything, you know, and I'm actually sitting, you might have think that it didn't phase me any, but I was actually sitting here quite shocked.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my life's been a little different than most people's. Yeah, the I could talk along this sort of a thing. I could talk about my medical devices that I started last night, but we didn't get a while you're gone.
Oh, good idea. Yeah, go for your life.
I got interested in electromedicine back in the 70s when I was at graduate school, and I started experimenting with different technologies. So, started studying acupuncture from an electrical standpoint. I studied the Russian and the Chinese and the Japanese literature, and I realized that they were all missing the boat. They were doing the right thing, but in the wrong way. So I did some electronic design engineering, built some devices, and we found a way to reliably and electronically and non-invasively measure the body's state of health, all the major internal organs, heart, lungs, stomach, large, small intestines, bladder, gallbladder, kidneys, spleen, liver, reproduction, metabolism. You connect the electrodes to the body. You turn the device on. It measures boom, 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 a few seconds. You see on the screen all the different organs. It tells you what state of health the organ system is in. It tells you if there is a problem, what organ it's in, if it's left at two organs, like the lungs or the kidneys or something like that, tells you. It tells you how bad the problem is, and it tells you what the problem is. And it doesn't do a thing to you. It's measuring what your body's emitting. This is called the multi-organ diagnostic system. It's similar to an EKG, but it doesn't work the same way. But it's very similar that it's measuring biopotential emitted by your body. Now, the spin-off device to that was the parent device. The spin-off device is called an OV1 fertility detector. This is the device only for women. The woman grabs it with either hand. She inserts one of her fingers into the electrode slot, turns it on. It can do one of three things. It can instantly tell the woman if she's pregnant or not. Two, it can tell her if she's ovulating, which means she can get pregnant, or if she isn't ovulating, which means she can't. So you can use it as a form of contraception or a means of fertility enhancement. And it is not based on basal body temperature. And the best part is women can't share the device. So if the first woman starts using it, it's programmed to work with her and no one else. Another device we have that's similar to Star Trek is the jet injector. Remember the original series? You know, this will not go through your clothing because it'll push the clothing into you. It would tear your body apart with particles from your clothing, which would be very bad. But this is you can load it with any size of medication vial directly. You don't need preloaded ampules. You turn it, you fire it, intramuscular or subcutaneous, no big deal. No pain upon sensation. It feels like as if you just slightly scratched an itch on your arm or whatever. And obviously there are dangers. If you shove this in your eye, it would blow your eye out. It is not used for IV, only used for subcutaneous or intramuscular. That's Star Trek. Another device is it's called the Cryogenic Remote Sensing Physiograph, CRESP, C-R-E-S-P. That's the acronym. Remember in Star Trek in the sick bay, people, whoever, Kirk or Spock, whatever, lay on a black, like leather-covered bed at an angle, and above them, behind them, was this electronic chart that read out vital signals. Well, that's called remote sensing, not remote viewing, remote sensing. I developed the real one. This was when we were at UCLA back in the mid-70s. And you know, we can record EEG, your brainwave activity, ECG, or EKG, your heart rate, and respiration, and some other muscle activity in the body from up to 12 feet away with nothing contacting your body. This is not telemetry. And when we were demonstrating it decades ago, the doctors were going, well, this is a trick. I go, what do you mean? Well, you have it somehow wired into the dynagraph. There were no computers back then like there are everywhere now. This was crude dynagraphs anywhere. It was all electronic. There were no computers. So I said to the doctors, well, if that's the case, you stand between the patient and the antenna and watch what happened. They did, and the instrument went nuts, the readouts on the graph. Why? Because the machine is detecting two clusters of signals, one from the patient that's there, one from the doctor standing between them and the patient. It's like noise. Can't tell the difference, stupid machine. They walked out of the field of the cone of view of the machine. Oh, it works. What good is it? long-term patient monitoring, intensive care units, cardiac care units, burn units, sudden infant death syndrome, SIDS, you know, they're like, oh, okay, who cares? So the problem with our technology is it's super cooled, like PET technology and other things. You've got to have your electronics, your sensors dropped to a very low temperature with liquid helium, which is expensive to create and maintain, so it's not going to be cheap. So we were dealing with a hospital back in the 80s about it, and actually at Cedars-Sinai. And it's a damn good hospital. It did really good work. I've been in there a few times, so I know. It was all, you know, the board of directors, they were all doctors and lawyers. So they said to me and my colleagues, I'm a medical doctor, they said, will this device be more or less expensive than what we currently use? And my response was real simple. I said, is your new Mercedes or BMW more or less expensive than the one that you replaced it with? And they said, more expensive. Said, well, there's your answer. Nothing new is cheaper than what was old. It's always more expensive.
Hey, Barry, I'm back.
Yeah, okay.
You're talking about some planned obsolescence
Yeah. I just talked about something called the cryogenic remote sensing physiograph. It is the Star Trek sickbay device that measures a body from a distance without anything touching you. No wires, no electrodes. And when I told the listeners that it works really well and Cedars-Sinai wanted to do it, so they offered us a contract for this device to develop it and to get it in, where in the end we would have owed them money. And I go, wait a minute, isn't this about making money? Oh, you're not going to make money, but we are. Okay, we walked away. So that was that. The last device we have is called a luminescent tongue depressor. And instead of, go to your ENT or your doctor, they put a wooden spatula on your tongue, put a pen light in your mouth, look around. Yeah, okay, that's old world. This is an acrylic spatula which is internally lit by very bright LEDs and multiple wavelength LEDs. And there's a sterile sheath, prophylactic sheath per patient. So as you push the tongue down, it lights up the mouth and throat cavity 20 times brighter than a pen light. And then when you see it in real time with white light, you then push a second button, and it causes any infection or blood in the throat or mouth cavity to fluoresce instantly, so it's visible to the naked eye. So, you know, the problem is we've discovered that trying to sell a new medical technology is like trying to sell a car to a caveman. There's a blog on my website about this, and unless you're part of the old boys network, you're part of the club, and you have a reputation for doing it, and it's just a continuation of something by another means. It's like you're building a better mousetrap. You're not building a new mousetrap, which our devices are. So it's been, it's been really hard. Another device, which I won't go into too much depth on, is called a computer-enhanced voice stress analyzer. And this is the ultimate lie detector. Today we have two forms of lie detection. One is a polygraph, which are, to me, worthless. Flip a coin. It is so easy to fool a polygraph, it's a joke. And anyone, a child, could fool a polygraph. That's why they're not admissible in court, because they're not reliable. Even though the practitioners will tell you they are. They're not. There's something, now the other end of it is called a psychological stress evaluator or a voice stress analyzer. This records your voice, and you still have to have a baseline established. And the machines are more accurate, more reliable, but there's still a level of, I guess, error. And that error is, if you don't know you're lying, the machine can't tell that you're uttering a falsehood. And if you're stressed because you had an accident driving to work, because you had an argument with your kids, your wife, because you don't feel good because you ate something bad for dinner the last night, this stupid machine makes it look like you're lying all the time. We found a way to get around all of that. Our device can differentiate between the truth, which is what we need to know, deception, which is what we want to know, to prevent crime and make life better, stress independent of deception. So if you're just stressed out for some reason, but you're not lying, okay, then from emotional disorder. So if you're mentally ill and you're lying because you're out of your mind, that's going to look different than if you're stressed or if you're telling the truth or you're just lying. So, we have these patents. And I thought, you know, when we first started playing with this a long time ago, it'd be a breeze to get it, you know, we'd get raise funds, we'd put it through finished development, go through these FDA approval process, which is very costly, and you put them out. I'm telling you, it'd be easier building the Starship Enterprise than it was doing this. It's literally no one's stolen it, probably because the stuff's a little out there compared to most Western medicine. We have no direct competitors. To give you an idea what we need to, for example, to take all the devices I've just named, except the remote sensing device. Let's forget that for the moment because it's way too expensive. The other devices, to take them where they are now to where they're on the market and we're selling them, would take $123 million, which is a lot. The minimal return on investment, ROI, for these devices is in excess of $7 billion. That's minimum. Yet investors go, but you've never done this before. So how do we know you can do it? The FDA hasn't approved them. Well, three of them are non-invasive. There's nothing to worry about. But big pharmaceutical companies, big pharma, big business, don't like change. They don't like things that are new. So they buy people off. They pay people to lie. You know, it's a sick system, but it works. So to an investor, imagine them putting up millions or tens of millions of dollars, and then they can't get it out. They've lost everything. A couple years ago, we got connected to Siemens in Germany through friends of friends I know in Europe. So their executive VP read our business plan. He was very excited. And he recommended that they take three of our devices and initiate development of three concurrently, which is a good idea because of economies of scale. Okay, great. So we never heard from them. Months and months go by, 9 months, 10 months. We finally get home and went upstairs to the head of the company. And apparently before the head of the company even read the plan, first thing he said was, they did read the plan, that he couldn't understand, it made no sense, this is garbage, it's snake oil. And I said, look, sir, stop lying. Stop. This is very unprofessional. Tell me the truth. Okay, said, you want the truth? I looked you up. Your partner is an MD. He's normal. But if I look you up, the UFO stuff, the parapsychology stuff, the ghost, because you're out of your mind. No one's going to put money in. You're insane. And that was the end of it. I said, well, at least you told me the truth. That was it. So when you give someone a very comprehensive, lengthy business plan that has everything a plan should have, and it's written properly, it's easy to read by people who don't have PhDs or MDs, and then they come back to you and they say things that don't make sense. You know, they never read the plan. So now when they do this, I call them out on it. And invariably say, we checked you up. We looked at you online. You're insane. We think you're crazy. However, if I've already sold some of these and was very wealthy, I could sell them a page out of the phone book and they'd go for it. Now, back in the late 70s, I developed an electronic Ouija board. Don't ask me how it worked because I can't tell you. I just know it worked some of the time. You put your hands over it, and it measured probably the biopotential remotely. I'm not sure. Anyway, I won't go into details. So we brought it to Mattel, and they play-tested it. It scared the hell out of them, so they didn't want it. The head of development wanted me to meet him privately at his own home, okay, about something else. So I meet him at his home a couple weeks later on a weekend. Big sprawling mansion in Palos Verdes out here. And I said, what can I do for you? He says, well, remember, this is 1978, so bear in mind the time. Have you ever seen the movie Sleeper with Woody Allen? Yeah. And I thought, okay, remember the Orgasmatron? I went, uh-oh. Could you build one of those? I said, a device to remotely stimulate the midbrain, the pleasure centers of our brain to produce an orgasm? Yeah. I go, are you out of your mind? Are you insane? You know, radiate people's brains with microwaves? Are you nuts? Well, they'd love it. I go, no. Can you tell us how to do it? No. Can you refer us to people who can do it? I went, no. You're going to murder people. But by the time they know it's bad, we'll have made money. I go, look, leave me alone. Get away. And that was it. So I've discovered that the real world is a little different than you're taught when you're going to school. Crazy people will come to your door and ask to do things that are insane. Now, if we were building a better weapon that would kill lots of people, that would get funded. But it's literally, that's why the blog on my website is called Energy Medicine, Selling a Car to a Caveman. It's literally, I feel like I'm living about 300 years too early. It's very, very awkward. And how many people have a real phaser? How many people have the Enterprise, a 3-4 Enterprise hovering over their table? A different life.
Not an awful lot, you know?
I mean, yeah, I mean, so, you know, it's like...
Well, what's the point in living a life like everybody else, though, you know? There's no excitement in that.
Your life, yeah, my life's been different. It's been unique. It's been entertaining and exciting. But then in some other ways, you know, a lot of my friends that I went to school with, they're married, divorced, have kids, married, divorced. It's like they're on a roller coaster, up and down, up and down. And they're just living. They work to live, and they live to work. And then when they come home, they got their family, and they sit there and eat, and they go to sleep, and they get old, and they die. And they're just existing. That's the way we groom society. That's how culture has evolved in the Western world. No change, no innovation, no nothing. You just do things. And I've been on TV in the last 45 years probably 1,000 times. Not as an actor, but because of the work I do. My parents, they passed away some time ago. They were embarrassed. Every time I was on TV, they were embarrassed to have to admit it to their friends. Because look what I'm on TV about. If I'd become a medical doctor or a lawyer, God forbid, it would have been different. And the reason I didn't become a medical doctor was because I'm a medical intuitive. We talk about that when I'm near people who are sick. I feel their symptoms, like I'm sick. And I said my bedside manner would be atrocious, so I didn't go into that. I wanted to be a fighter pilot, an astronaut. Didn't go into that. Too short. My vision wasn't good enough. A lot of my friends were race car drivers who died in accidents, but you know, didn't go into that full time. But I used to race cars semi-professionally. So I've lived a different life, and it's the one thing that's interesting is you never know what's coming. It's not like, you know, the same job 5 days a week, you know, 50 weeks a year, it's the same thing. Day in, day out, different people. I did a shoot earlier today, as I told you, for a pilot for a new series. I'll do another one in a couple of weeks. So you make a little money, you talk to people, and, you know, and then they look at you like, huh? I was talking.
You're doing like quite a lot, actually. You seem to be doing more pilots than a slutty stewardess.
Yeah. I like that. It's a good. I like that metaphor. Most of these things never go to series. I did a pilot a couple of years ago called Ghostly Lovers, and you know it was a joke. I mean, they paid me well. I talked, and the women that were on the show claimed they were having sex with ghosts. They all admitted privately that they lied. They made it up to get on television. Of course they made it up. So I said, let me get this straight. It's not only it's a very cheap date because they can't take you out. You can't go out to dinner or go to a movie. And if you like smoking, that's what happens after sex. They disappear. They turn to vapor. They didn't like that. And I said, you know, the reason I was asked to come on the show was because of the Entity case. And I said on the show, I don't for one second believe that Doris Beither in 1974 or 75 was raped by a ghost. That's what she thought. But if you look at the case psychologically, as you spoke of in the last hour, it turns out it's a form of libidinous fantasy. It's a projection of part of her mind. The woman was obsessed with sex. She craved it. I mean, there was an old term used for one of the most beautiful actresses in Hollywood, I thought, was Joan Collins. And her nickname in the industry was the British Open, and it wasn't about golf. In that regard, that look, ever since I was a kid, her look I was enamored by. So my friends knew it. So in 1976, I kept having dreams that I'm talking to a young Joan Collins, but she's my age. And there's no British accent. I'm going, and I told my friends and my colleagues, stop it with Joan. Look, I said, I'm telling you. So we get called out to a case, to investigate a case in Encino, in the San Fernando Valley. Woman's name is Judy. And we go out there. The woman opens the door. She is wait. In my dreams, I'm talking to young Joan, no British accent. She keeps calling Barry, but she's not calling me. I'm going, I'm losing my mind. What's happening? So we go out to the house weeks later. The woman opens the door. She's a dead ringer for Joan. I mean, a young Joan. I mean, an exact clone, no accent. And her husband's name is Barry. And my friend went, okay, I'm not going to argue with you again. Okay. Then, listen, this is a better one. Ever since I was a kid watching TV, there was one actor, whenever I saw him in anything, I know this man. I know his voice. I know his body language. I know his face, everything. I know the man. It was driving me crazy. Every time, he was at everything you can imagine, except Star Trek. Name was Edward Andrews. You'd know him if you saw him. Big guy, very interesting. He was several Twilight Zone episodes. So, like, what am I thinking? Okay, in 1981 or something? I get called out. I get a call from Mrs. Edward Andrews in Pacific Palisades. Okay, things are going on. Go out to the house to meet them. I walk in. There's Mr. and Mrs. Andrews. And I shook. He was a very tall man, about 6'4 or 5, big guy. And I said, pleasure meeting you. And before I could say anything, do we know each other? You look really familiar. What was I supposed to say? Yeah, I've known you since the day I was born, but I don't know why or how. Then their daughter comes out, introduced the daughter, like in her early 20s or late teens. And I forgot what her real name was, but that's not relevant. I remember what her nickname was. Her nickname was Taffy, T-A-F-F-Y. Why did you call your daughter Taffy? And they go, we don't know. He died a few years later. Very good actor. He was in everything. He was in Alfred Hitchcock Presents. He was in Thriller. He was in every Western you can imagine. Cheyenne, Bonanza, Wild Wild West. You name it. He was in it. He was in, I think, 2 or 3 Twilight Zone episodes. Everyone know the man. He worked everywhere. Unbelievable. And then, in 1976, one of my cases made the front page of the L.A. Times view section. Big deal. Picture, I'm in there and whatever, talking about our work at this case in Hollywood called the Hollymont case I spoke of earlier. Okay, so if you turn over, the first page had my picture on it. If you turn that page over, whose picture is on, right on the back of mine? Joan Collins. I thought, what is that supposed to mean? I don't know. Never met her. She's a lot older than me. But that look is still what I consider interesting. Now listen to this. This is another good one. There was a book written in the mid-90s by a friend of mine called Hollywood Haunted by Laura Jacobson, all about haunt ghosts in the entertainment industry. Not about movies, but about celebrities that have had run-ins with ghosts and hauntings and things. So there's a chapter in it, and she's talking about the actress Susan Strasberg, the daughter of Lee Strasberg, who was the famous acting coach. Okay, I was always enamored by Susan Strasberg, gorgeous brunette, sort of my type. Never met her. And in there, Lori knew Susan long before she knew me, and Susan told her we were dating, and I went, dating? I never met her. What are you talking about? When the lab was up and running, there was an episode of Merv Griffin. And Susan was on. And they asked her, is she dating anybody? Now, I wasn't watching the show because I didn't watch talk shows. They bored me. She said, yeah, I'm dating some guy named Barry from UCLA's parapsychology laboratory. A number of friends saw it. They called me, are you dating Susan Strasberg? I said, I've never met her. I would have loved to met her. She's beautiful. Nope, I never met her. Okay, then let's jump forward to a few years ago. I'm in a Xerox place in Los Angeles. I'm standing there, and this guy, tall guy, dark hair, salt and pepper hair, hi, Barry. Hello. Remember me? I go, no. Name is Larry. And he told me, I won't say his last name because we know who we're talking about and might have privacy issues. I said, okay. Do I know you? He said, sure you do. You used to date my sister. Who's your sister? He threw out a name. I said, what? No, I don't know your sister. You used to date her. How do I know you met her through Susan? Susan who? Susan Strasberg. I go, I don't know your sister. I did know her, and I never know Susan. Then this guy's telling me about the car I used to have back in 1969. It was a special Corvette and with black side pipes, very loud, like a jet on the road. Yeah, but I don't have bad memory. I don't have any memory lapses. If I had met Susan Strasberg, I wouldn't have remembered it, and I wouldn't brag about it, but yeah, I met her. But I didn't meet her. And then through her, I met this other girl I was dating. It didn't work out. okay, I don't know what to say. A few weeks later, I'm in a deli in Sherman Oaks, and this man's sister that claimed I dated her was there, and my friend said, you know her? I go, no, I know who she is. She's looking at me really weird. I didn't, what am I going to say? I don't know the woman. A few weeks later, I'm back at the Xerox place. There's her brother again. She goes, my sister was really pissed. You didn't come over and say hello. I don't know your sister. I've never met you. I would never go up to a stranger and go, how are you? Kind of, you know, no. Then I find out this woman, this guy's sister, is married. Again, I think it's his third marriage. Her husband's name is almost identical to mine. Well, the first name's Barry. The last time, I won't even say what it is. But phonetically similar, but not identical. And I thought, what is going on here? Okay. Then I'm in the hospital once, being prepped for surgery. And the nurse says, oh, there's a doctor that looks just like you. Oh, okay. So they call him in. He's 6'4", has dirty blonde hair and blue eyes. He looks like an actor or model. I said, you think I look like that? What, are you blind? So what's going on? You know, I just, and then I was at a deli once near me about 5-6 years ago, and they said, you're back so soon. I go, from where? You were just in here a few minutes ago. No, I wasn't. There's a doctor, an MD, who lives near here, looks just like me. I'm in the market about 10 years ago, and this lady comes up to me. She says, hi, Mark. I go, who's Mark? You. I go, no, I'm Barry. No, you're Mark. No, she I worked for you for 20 years. You don't recognize me? I showed her my driver's license. She went, oh, my God. So I said, here's my card. Have him give me a call. He never did. Same face, much heavier than me, and more hair. Maybe I should get his credit card. I could live off him. But, you know, the whole, I live a strange life. I mean, you know, what am I supposed to do? Oh, another good story. This is good. My crazy women. In 1970, I was teaching parapsychology at UCLA, 74, 5, 6, and, yeah, and early 7. 3/4 out of 4, Moorhall 100. So one of the years, this really cute blonde comes up to me, and she introduces herself, and she said, you know, I don't know who you are. Don't you know? You know my father, who he's your doctor. I go, I didn't know, whatever. So we started dating. You know, not my type. Really attractive, but not my type. It didn't go anywhere, but some really weird things started to happen. We were together, and suddenly things just start moving around inside her home. Cans of Coke went flying. The stereo turned itself on and off. We were driving up to her. It was raining. I was going to get out to open the door because it was broken because, you know, I didn't want her to do it. And I touched her in the car while it was raining, got a violent shock, and the door opened on its own. And then, so it was going nowhere quickly. So it was winding down. But before it ended, I had a dream. And in the dream, I see her father, my doctor, floating face up underwater. I go, this is weird. And she is frantically swimming down towards him. And then she's giving a mouth-to-mouth underwater, and I went, this isn't good. It's symbolic, but it is not good. So I told her the dream, what does it mean? I said, well, I don't know. I wouldn't worry about it. A few weeks later, she's at her parents' house. They have a pool. Her father suffers a pulmonary embolism and drowns on his own fluids in his lungs. She gives a mouth-to-mouth by the pool. So what I saw was accurate, if not distorted through primary process. So that ended the relationship real quickly. Then my parents bumped into her about 20 years later, and they said I wouldn't have known her because she gained about 100 pounds. Oh, okay, well, then I guess I didn't miss anything. So I lived a different life, you know? I mean, it's the last girlfriend I had, I think I mentioned this, everything was fine, but I was around her. I kept getting sick all the time. And I said, look, I really like you. We get along well, but you're falling apart. She had a prolapsed mitral valve, and she had early onset of menopause, and I was feeling her symptoms. Yeah, she had it checked out. Yeah, turns out. Yeah. So, couldn't see each other. She got really sick in a few years, falling apart, moved out of L.A. So I live a different life than most people do. It's in the last blog on my website, called The Different Kind of Psychic, Being a Medical Intuitive. It's, again, what if you woke up tomorrow and you had a superpower? You couldn't fly, you weren't invulnerable, and you weren't super strong, but what if you could literally look inside of people, which I can do? But what if you started telling your friends and demonstrating it to your friends and family? You think they'd be attracted to it? No, they'd be scared the hell. They'd be scared the hell out of them. And that's what happens. My last doctor, not the one I spoke to that died. This was 6 years ago. He retired. He comes in. I was there for my physical. And he comes in. He's taking my blood pressure. I said, excuse me. He says, do you drive a black Lexus SC430? And he goes, what? Yeah, black. How do you know? I said, I don't know. That's what came into my head. He goes, yeah. And I said, you're having lumbar problems, right? And this and this. How'd you know? I said, you got too close to me. You're standing close. I felt it. He ran out of the room like I shot him in the ass with a BB gun. So, this is why I didn't become a medical doctor. It would have been horrible to seeing people coming in. What do you do?
What do you do? Indeed. Now, unfortunately, we're coming to the end of this broadcast today. Would you like to add anything more? We can stretch it out as long as you want.
I think it's important. Okay, people understand. We're talking about all these incredible things happening. We're talking about an energy source that is not known yet. It is not electromagnetic. It is not gravitational. It's not nuclear. Call it zero-point energy, ZPE. It may explain everything in the paranormal and a lot of ufology. If we come to understand the nature of this energy, this force, it will redefine the human condition. It will solve a lot of our problems in terms of energy, transportation, and medicine. It will alter the destiny of the human race in ways we can't conceive of, or it will destroy us because it can be weaponized. And that's another reason why nothing's being done with it. You want to learn more about this? Go to my website, barrytaft.net, or buy my book, Aliens Above, Ghosts Below. You won't be bored. You might be a little frightened and a nerd, but you won't be bored.
A little bit of fear and terror is always a good motivator, I found sometimes, especially if you want people to be programmed into accepting solutions that you've prepackaged after you created the crisis yourself. Barry, it's been fantastic, fabulous, as you would say, stunning. And I'm quite glad that you've spent so much time speaking with us. Thank you.
Been a pleasure. Hope to talk to you soon. Okay?
All right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the Vinnie Eastwood Show is listener-supported, of course, so we cannot continue to do shows like these and hear from voices like Barry's without your support. Please do go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com when you can and make a donation and preferably set up a automatic payment, and we'll keep on paying the bills and keep on exposing the scumbaggery.